And welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power, and we shine a light ahead of us on the path to where evolution is leading. The purpose of our Wiki Politiki radio podcast is to bring left and right front and center to face the music and dance together, to solve problems together rather than defend positions. On this show, we'd like to look at the big picture, and today we're looking at the picture that is so big, it's the picture beyond the picture, quantum physics and the nature of reality itself. Now, a bit of background. About a dozen years ago, I picked up a book that had a fascinating title, The Madness of George Bush. And the author, Paul Levy, is a student of Carl Jung's work, who had a life-changing personal experience that we'll hear about that helped him recognize the dreamlike nature of life and reality. And his work suggests that the scenario playing in the world is a reflection of the inner workings of the human psyche. The not-so-melodrama that's outpictured is a way for our species to come to grips with the inner pictures that have subconsciously ruled us for so long. And since reading that Madness of George Bush book, I've been fascinated with Paul's work. Now, his next book was, to me, the most extraordinary of all, called Wetiko, W-E-T-I-K-O, which is the Native American word for, well, we'll call it evil or the vampiric energies. And this book went further and deeper in turning reality inside out. His latest book, which is called The Quantum Revelation, which will be out May 22nd of this year, he describes as, quote, a radical synthesis of the realms of quantum physics, alchemy, shamanism, Buddhism, Kabbalah, mystical Christianity, and the works of Carl Jung and science fiction writer and deep thinker Philip K. Dick. This book takes reality as a dream to the next level, suggesting that quantum mechanics proves that the material reality doesn't actually exist. So, hey, we have nothing to worry about. Seriously, Paul Levy is one of the deepest and most original thinkers on the planet, and his website proclaims his mission, Awaken in the Dream. So thank you for being with us, Paul, and welcome.
Yeah, hi. I'm real excited for being here, so thank you so much.
Well, let's begin at the beginning. Why don't you tell us about the pivotal event that happened that transformed your life and set you on the path that you've been on for the last at least 35 years. Tell us what happened.
Sure. No, that'll be my pleasure. So to create some context, I was in my mid-20s, and it wound up, I didn't realize this at the time, but my father was a really sick man, and I was the only child, and he had acted out his unhealed abuse onto me, and it created just enormous suffering. And so the only way I figured out to deal with it was to go inwards, was to go inside of my own mind and just to witness what was happening. And I did that for a couple of years, you know, so intensely that I had this life-transforming spiritual awakening. And one way to describe that is that I began to actually see that, oh, this is a collective dream. We're all dreaming up together into materialization. But the challenging part of the experience, within 24 hours of having the awakening, and I was so enthusiastic And, you know, I hadn't integrated the realization. It was overwhelming that people thought I was having a psychotic break. I mean, it looked exactly like I was out of my mind, and I certainly had ejected out of my conceptual mind. And so I was brought to a hospital and hospitalized and immediately diagnosed and told, oh, you have this, you know, this chemical imbalance, because that, you know, the DSM-3 had just come out that year before announcing the new discovery of the chemical imbalance. And I was told, oh, I would have this illness for the rest of my life. I would need to be on medication. And I just thought, oh my God, these people, they have no idea what's happening. So I got out of that first hospital after 3 days and continued the awakening. But I was so, you know, kind of, it was so intense that maybe about four or something like that, five other times during that next maybe 18 months, I got hospitalized because I wasn't in an ashram. I wasn't in a container. I wasn't in a monastery. I was just out in the world, and I hadn't integrated what I was realizing. And so it was incredibly traumatic, that part, the whole psychiatric part of what was happening. And it wound up that it totally destroyed my family. You know, all of my family bought in to the psychiatric point of view, thinking, oh, you know, Paul just has this mental illness, and he's in denial of his illness. So it had this tragic aspect, but I was able to extricate myself from psychiatry and continue my awakening. And then I found my teachers, these you know, Tibetan teachers, and from different cultures too. And then I found my work. And so that's really been healing me over the last 35 years, basically.
You know, it's very interesting the similarity between what some might call a psychotic break and spiritual awakening is kind of a thin line and not always accessible from the outside. Many years ago, I was teaching a writing class at University of Michigan, and one of my students was an older student, and she began to have these episodes and experiences of psychic revelations and these things that were very disturbing to her. And her husband was very seriously considering having her committed. And so at the time, I had a friend who was a therapist who also was a meditator. And I said, you know, maybe you want to see this guy and see what he says. And after she saw him, he agreed with me that what she was having was a spiritual awakening. And we sent her to the local Siddha Yoga Ashram. And within 2 weeks, she was a teacher there. So
Yeah, totally.
I
No,
definitely
that
can relate to that.
right, and that deeper patterning, that's exactly it. You know, so often in like cultures that are more connected with nature, like, you know, sort of like any indigenous culture, they would understand when somebody all of a sudden acts kind of weird, they might be being called to be some sort of shaman or healer or something like that. I mean, it's typical, and it almost always gets catalyzed by some form of like unhealed abuse or trauma. And but of course, in the West, we're, you know, psychiatrists are just trained to pathologize, but in cultures based on wisdom, they'll oftentimes honor and support the person going through it because they might be becoming a healer.
Exactly. You also mentioned on your website the wounded healer. The wounded healer archetype, Carl Jung's work, Tibetan Buddhism. How did all of these wind together over the last 30-something years to put you on
Yeah,
your
well,
path?
sure. So the thing for me, I was in such deep suffering with reference to the abuse, not only from my father, but then from psychiatry, that I was following the threads of anything, any tradition or teaching or teacher that spoke to me, that you know, felt that it was like it was true. And then over decades of just doing that, of devoting my life to healing myself, then I began to, in my own creative way, to synthesize these traditions and to recognize, oh, well, alchemy and shamanism and Jung and Buddhism and dreaming and art, they're all related in quantum physics. And, you know, so that helped me discover my work. And all I've really been doing is just, you know, kind of, you know, really trying to integrate these different streams that have this wisdom in them in my own creative way.
You know, my introduction to your work was through a book called The Madness of George Bush, and that title might seem rather strange to people listening. tell us about that book and how it grew out of your work and understanding.
Sure. So what happened when George W. Bush became president, I was so freaked out, as were a number of us. And, you know, it's funny now with Trump, you look back almost like with fondness, you know, with Bush. But, you know, it was the way I kept myself sane was to write the book. And what I was basically trying to point out was that this is a collective dream, which is what I was realizing in my awakening. And when you see the world that way, you begin to realize, oh, well, here's Bush, who we have all collaboratively dreamed up into materialization to embody our own madness. Like, he was a reflection. He was a dream character of aspects, you know, in ourselves. And, you know, as soon as you begin to see that, all of a sudden, that sense of he's separate, you just see through the separation and you actually recognize, wow, we're all interconnected and we're all these, like, you know, some being dream characters, we're these reflections of each other. And that can actually feed into to seeing the dreamlike nature. And so, you know, the whole point is to see things in a symbolic way, which is the language of dreams.
Yeah, you know, it's very, very interesting that, you know, for centuries and millennia, we've had, you know, life is a dream, life is but a dream, all of this. And we'll talk about a little later when we talk about your latest work, that really is true. It really is more than a metaphor.
No, that it's funny you say that, because it brings to mind a few years ago, this really eminent Tibetan, he's a Westerner who's like, you know, this translator, and he came over for a visit, and we were just meeting and talking about stuff, and then it came up that he was taking, you know, the teachings that life is a dream in a metaphoric way. And, you know, we had a disagreement because I was saying, no, it's not metaphor. This, it's not like this is like a dream. This is a dream. And, you know, it was that experience that I began to actually plug into back in 1981 that, you know, that radically changed my life.
How does it feel to be to be walking among humans, so to speak, and to recognize life as a dream? How has it altered your own, how you are in the world?
Oh, wow. Now, that's a great question, and that's a really hard question, because it's so radically altered my view and just my experience of who I am and my experience of life, in the sense that, you know, I'm continually contemplating, like, say something happens that's challenging, where I might be triggered or I might get, you know, kind of hooked in some sort of through a wound or, you know, whatever in somebody's process, something will happen and I'll get, you know, kind of activated. But all of a sudden, you know, that can happen. That still does happen. But then, you know, I have access to this point of view where I just contemplated, well, what if that were a dream? What is that showing me? What unconscious parts of myself are playing out? Like, how would I interpret that in a symbolic way? And, you know, what I've learned is to, you know, to really see all of what's happening in your life moment by moment, not only after the fact, but in the moment, to contemplate through that, through those, you know, the eyes of the symbolic awareness.
You know, years ago, I studied dream interpretation with somebody who studied with Freud, actually. And,
oh, wow.
Well, I mean, he studied in that tradition. He was too young to have known Freud, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that every part of the dream, every element, every thing, every person in the dream is something inside of you. So you have full ownership of everything, of every little piece of that. Every piece of furniture in the dream is something that you own. And that's when we'll talk about your new book, we see that we own things because things don't exist until we perceive them. So,
right. That's a radical point of view that quantum physics is bringing forth. But, like, I guess one thought about what you were just saying about, you know, every part of the dream or aspects of yourself. When I got out of that last hospital in 1982, that was the last hospitalization, I was deeply in trauma between the abuse from my father and then the psychiatric abuse. And that's when I began having dreams, you know, at night, night after night, these unbelievable dreams. And I had no idea how to work with them or how to interpret them. But it was clear that my unconscious, it was because I was in such deep trouble that my unconscious was coming to my aid and really trying to show me stuff. And that's how I really began to learn the language of dreaming.
You know, it's pretty amazing in listening to this, you know, when you contemplate how many lives are destroyed by people not recognizing that and taking the diagnosis, taking the medication, these days getting strung out on, you know, some horrific opioid or antidepressant and so on.
Totally.
That suppresses life. So you're a counselor as well. And so you counsel people? Is that the
I'm in private practice. I'm totally not a therapist. I don't have any credential. The only credential that I joke with my friends is that according to psychiatry, I'm certifiably out of my mind, and I'm happy to be that. But I'll help people, and it's based on what I've been through, that I've, you know, you go through some form of like an ordeal that's an initiation, and it gives you some sort of experience where you can actually, you know, be able to meet other people in their suffering in a way that can really be helpful.
You know, I have to feel that many people get this initiation, and because of how we're trained in the Western mind, very, very, very few people recognize these incidents as initiations that are gateways to helping other people through.
Oh, totally. And the thing I should say, when I was in the psychiatric community, they would have considered it a success, like the treatment would have been successful if I would have subscribed to their version of that, oh, yes, I have this lifelong illness and I need to be medicated till my dying breath. That would be a successful treatment from their point of view. You know, which is insane, because here I haven't been on medication for like 35 years, haven't had any episodes at all, because I figured out how to navigate consensus reality while at the same time keeping my expanded awareness.
Yeah, it really is very, very interesting. We're going to take a very short break here and do a couple of commercials. And when we come back, we'll talk about Wetiko. My guest is Paul Levy, and he is the author of a book called Wetiko, among other things.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the WikiPolitiki sponsors page.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
We're back with our guest, Paul Levy, and we're going to talk about a book that really impacted me several years ago. It's called Wetiko. Tell us a little bit about, tell us about Wetiko. What is Wetiko? What does it mean?
Sure. So it's a term, you know, an indigenous term that the Native Americans, they've coined to really connote the spirit of evil. And it's a cannibalistic spirit. But it's actually, you know, so what I did in the Wetiko book, and then I have another book, Dispelling Wetiko, which is really a more expanded version of the Wetiko book, where I actually, just as a Westerner, translated it into a more modern sort of this psychological idiom for, you know, for people in the West. And so it's sort of like this virus of the mind. And it works through the unconscious, through the projective tendencies of our mind, because we're always projecting onto the inkblot of the waking dream. And so, but what Wetiko will do, it'll operate through the part of us. We all have this part of us that is unconscious, that has this blind spot, and it'll, you know, through the projective tendencies of the mind, it will entrance us. So we become hypnotized, and there's no one else doing that but ourselves. And the thing to realize that every spiritual tradition, they'll talk about Wetiko, but they'll call it different names. You know, they'll have different symbol system or a different sort of articulation of it. But any spiritual tradition that's based on having to do with real understanding, you know, it has to be pointing at this Wetiko phenomena. And the thing which is amazing about it, so its source is the human psyche, but it operates not only through our perceptions and the way we project, but it actually, in a certain way, it'll seemingly extend itself out into the world and somehow configure events, actual events happening on the world stage or in our individual life, so as to reflect the inner state of our psyche, you know, in a synchronistic way. So it's an inner disease of the soul that actually explicates itself through the outer world. Okay?
You know, I've heard a number of healers describe disease as the healing process itself, that the disease is a manifestation of healing. It's the first step of healing that brings something to consciousness. And so, you know, I noticed that you had that little pang of nostalgia for George Bush, given Donald Trump, you know, and looking at that current new word situation, you know, we actually have that outpicturing that has always seemed to me to be a reflection of our, I call Donald Trump America's balloon karma payment, you know, that this is what we've been, this is what's been under the surface. There's a very helpful book, and I know you're familiar with it, called Unholy Hungers.
Totally. I've actually connected with the author. Yeah.
Yeah, she's in your area, I do believe.
Yeah, totally. She's in Portland.
Yeah, and this book for the listeners, it really is about, similar to yours, about the vampire archetype, and she says that every society has some kind of word or term or denotation for the quote unquote vampire, and that we have it. We humans all have this. She calls it as a low grade infection, and when external situations and circumstances, particularly when people are put into fear, when they're put into very, very, very stressful situations, that's when these kind of tendencies emerge. So in your working with Wetiko, your second book is called what?
Yeah, it's actually called Dispelling Wetiko.
You Good.
Know, and
yeah,
so
tell
what
us
it is,
more
it's,
about
it's that.
This. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's that book that, you know, it's the Wetiko book. That was just the original three articles, and then it just got unfolded. Then I signed the contract, and I had X amount of time to get them the manuscript, and I just wrote and wrote and wrote and unfolded those original three articles. And the thing about Watiko, you see, it feeds off of like fear and if we have like a polarized point of view. So it will literally create separation between us, and then it'll feed off of that separation. So what that's pointing at is that, you know, if I think, oh, Donald Trump has Watiko and I don't, well, that point of view is an expression that I've fallen under the thrall of Watiko because I'm in a polarized state. But if I see, oh, Donald Trump, he's embodying Watiko and he's a reflection of that part of me, all of a sudden that cuts through the separate self, and it's stepping into that, oh, we're actually interdependent and interconnected. That's the actual true nature of our situation. And that point of view is the point of view where we actually are actually beginning to dispel Watiko.
So have you had experiences, particularly, let's say, if you're doing counseling with your clients, where they've identified this external force that they consider evil, that they're polarized against? Just like, I mean, let's face it, resisting Donald Trump is irresistible. You know, it's mm-hmm. people want to do that. And yet it most definitely feeds that energy. Have you had situations with people that you've been working with where they were able to dispel the Watiko by recognizing it in themselves?
Yeah, well, sure. Well, that's the way of doing it. But the thing is that, we all have it in potential at each and every moment. And so, like, not only with one-on-one clients, but I have all of these circles of people. I have three or four of them every week. And it's so interesting when you bring, people together. You know, the person at any given moment who is most susceptible will in a way become unwittingly the instrument to play out Watiko, whether it's, they're acting out something or they're having a reaction or they're being triggered, and it's contagious. When the unconscious is in the field like that, all of a sudden it'll trigger and catalyze, certain other people, and then all of a sudden something shadowy or unconscious will begin to play out. But that's actually great because that's an opportunity to really try to have the recognition of what's actually happening. Because the thing about Watiko that's the most amazing thing is that hidden, encoded within the pathology is not only its own medicine, but a form of a gift. It can actually help us to wake up to the dreamlike nature. And the thing that means is that if Watiko didn't exist in our world, we would need to invent it because it's actually our ally. It's helping us to wake up. But if we don't see that, it's going to destroy us.
You know, it's interesting. We, here in our secular Western world and, progressive ideology, evil, the idea of quote-unquote evil, seems to be an archaic concept. And in this postmodern moral relativism and so on, we've kind of abandoned the idea of evil. Can you say something about that?
Sure. Oh, totally, totally. And I've become a real controversial figure in certain New Age circles around this. But I'm all for the light. And the thing I'm pointing out is that you can't really get to the light, or the light has no meaning or any bit without, if it doesn't, bring to light darkness. We need to illumine the darkness, because the way Watiko works is undercover. As long as we don't see it, it's omnipotent and it can act itself out. So the thing about evil, I'm not talking from the metaphysical point of view. I'm just talking in the realm of like from the psychological. It's very real. Its effects are all around us. Anybody who's saying that evil is not real, I would say, oh, they're either, I'm kind of hesitating to say they're just stupid, but or blind, or just naive, because I don't know what more evidence you need of what the word evil is pointing at, And I would even say people who say, oh, there's no such thing as evil, I don't want to give my attention to evil because it feeds it. That stance unwittingly is feeding the very evil they're in denial of. So I guess one final thing is that I'm not talking about getting fascinated by it. I'm just talking about not turning away and being in avoidance of it, but actually seeing it, seeing how it works, and then recognizing we are sovereign beings who can choose where we place our attention. And when we see evil, what we can do is go, oh, I see you, and I want to invest my psychic energy in creating the actual world I want to live in. That's real. That's our real creative power.
So that would probably lead to how the idea of Wetiko relates to awakening in the dream. How does that relate to the dream?
Yeah, sure. Because the thing about there are three ways of seeing Wetiko when they're all interconnected. And, like, you know, the one way is to see, like I was talking about before, oh, yeah, we're not separate. We're interconnected. Like, you know, if I'm seeing Donald Trump as being, you know, an embodiment of Wetiko, well, that's then I'm polarized and I have the disease. But if I have the recognition that it's a reflection, oh, then we're not separate. The second thing is, in physics, they talk about this thing called, there's like this non-local field in which we're all contained and which connects all of us. And so to see that there's some sort of higher dimensional field that's actually explicating itself through the, you know, whatever's happening in our world. But all of those two ideas, you know, then become, you know, sort of complemented by seeing the dreamlike nature. You know, so seeing that we're not separate, seeing the non-local field, seeing the dreamlike nature, they're all three aspects of the perspective that actually can dispel Wetiko. And the thing about seeing the dreamlike nature is that you realize, oh, wow, who I thought I was, this ego, that's just a model for who I am. That's being dreamed by a deeper part of me. And that's who I actually am. And that's where you begin to interface with your creative power.
You know, there's, you know, in the, you know, since you started doing your work, one of the things that's come to the fore is this family constellation therapy, which is totally in the field.
Right.
You know, in how does your work relate to that? Is there a resonance with?
Totally. Because the thing is, you know, just so you know, I mean, that's so meaningful to me because in my family, my father, he was a really sick man. I mean, he was basically a criminal. He should have been behind bars. I mean, that's, you know, that's what we're dealing with. And yet he acted out his abuse, and I was the one who began to suffer and point at the darkness that was coming through him. And then I became the identified patient. So all of a sudden, it was me who was seen by the rest of the family as the one who was sick or evil or crazy or, you know, just fill in the blank. And, you know, but of course, then that takes them away from having to look at their own darkness, their own shadow, because I was the carrier of it. I was like the scapegoat. So the idea of like family constellations is that seeing a family as a whole system, and that there's a field, and there are these roles that get dreamed up that different people play out at different moments in time. That's a much more, like, that perspective is way more of a holistic point of view that's in alignment with actually what's actually happening.
Well, we can certainly look at our national and world situations and appreciate that's what's going on as well, that we are a family. Let's imagine that the body politic of America is family, and we look at the perpetrations like the assassinations in the 1960s that created this sense of trauma that has led to the kind of consciousness that would elect, that would choose a Donald Trump, or that would nominate a Hillary Clinton, to put it another way. So I think that, how do you see in our current political affairs, this recognition of Wetiko playing out and being able to create some kind of transformation?
Yeah, well, it's very much like, I mean, even just on the individual, you know, point of view, when there's trauma, what happens? The person, you know, unconsciously is like, you know, there's the compulsion to repeat the trauma, which is the pathology, right? That is what trauma is. But encoded in that repetition compulsion, they're actually trying to complete something, to heal and to integrate something. But if they don't actually have the recognition of what they're doing, they're just going to continue to be unconsciously acting it out. Now, what I just described on the individual dimension, that's exactly what's playing out in a collective fashion where, you know, our species, where we have PTSD, our entire species, and we're acting it out on the world stage. And we're just, you know, continually in a compulsive way, just repeating the trauma. But we're doing that. It's almost like we're destroying ourselves so as to learn how not to destroy ourselves. And we clearly haven't learned how not to destroy ourselves, or we wouldn't be destroying ourselves. So, you know, I'm pointing at that encoded in our acting out, you know, on a collective scale, it's actually we're trying to show ourselves something so as to wake up, but it all depends if we recognize what we're showing ourselves.
I saw a presentation on family constellation therapy a couple of years ago, and when this young woman who was slashing her wrists for no apparent reason found out that her grandmother had done something that she wanted to punish herself for, and this was something that was an inherent family pattern.
Mm-hmm.
That realization alone extinguished that behavior. She had no more reason to do it. It was brought to consciousness and consequently brought to completion as we acknowledge this. So do you have any kind of I hesitate to call it a ritual or ceremony or practice that helps people take these traumas that are operating in their subconscious that they may have had nothing to do with and heal them?
And the thing is, I don't know how to answer that because it's very creative, my work. I don't have like a particular technique or a tradition. You know, I just, you know, get in the moment and connect with the person and unfold their process. But one of the things that's really helpful is, you know, when I find out about people, because everybody is really going through it, we're all suffering in our own way. And it can be incredibly helpful for people when you show them that what they're personally struggling with, that they're interfacing with the whole macrocosm, with the collective non-local field, and they might be kind of like a shaman acting out some unconscious part that's in the non-local field. And all of a sudden then they step out of personalizing their own experience and you know, a lot of people then will pathologize themselves. Instead of doing that, they have a deeper context to understand their actual personal process as a reflection of like this greater process that's happening in the world.
Yep. You know, I remember going through something and the counselor I was working with, I was saying, why is this shift happening to me? And she said, well, so that you can help other people through the same passage. Without having gone through it, you won't be able to do that. Okay, we'll be back with Paul Levy in just a short bit and talk about his new book.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life, I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Well, we're back with Paul Levy, and it's been quite a fascinating hour that we've had. Now we're going to talk a little bit more about something that doesn't exist. We're going to talk about the material world, and we're going to talk about Paul's most recent book on quantum physics, The Quantum Revelation. The Quantum Revelation, how does it relate to Wetiko, and how does it relate to your previous work?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and it totally relates to Wetiko, because now, to contextualize quantum physics, you know, before quantum physics, there was just, you know, the regular sort of, like, whether you call it Newtonian physics, classical physics, or pre-quantum physics, that really conceived of the universe as being an object, as objectively existing, that the physicists were then studying like this separate objective world. And of course, as soon as they would view it, you know, as if the world, you know, that it actually existed objectively, being like a dream, the world would just give all the evidence to the classical physicists that the world, that it was objective and fragmented and separate. So then, in a sense, they had entranced themselves via the creative power of their own mind. Well, then comes quantum physics, and quantum physics has empirically proven that there's no such thing as an objective universe, that even the idea of an objective universe, it's nonsense. And keep in mind, this isn't, you know, some sort of, like, crazy theory. This has empirically been proven, you know, again and again and again. And so that's very much related to Wetiko, in the sense that, like, the thing about Wetiko, it'll project onto the inkblot of the waking dream, and then it will conceive that what it sees, what it's experiencing as its projection, is objectively, you know, existent, and then it will react to that seemingly objective whatever it is as if it's real, and it'll become conditioned and programmed, and it's actually hypnotizing itself via its own projective tendencies. That's Wetiko, and that's what pre-quantum physicists had actually fallen into. So quantum physics is like the medicine for this, you know, sort of this false view of reality that physicists had, and it's actually like the medicine for Wetiko, because it's showing that there's no such thing as an objective universe outside of us. But it's even more than that, because so the thing about quantum physics, via the act of observation, you know, they've discovered that, oh, the act of observation is actually influencing the universe that's being observed, that you can't separate out the observer and the observed. It's part of one interconnected, inseparable quantum system with no separation. But like, one other thing is that, and this is so mind-blowing, when you discover that there's no objective universe, well, what about the subject? What about you, inside of us? That if we don't have anything objective to be in relationship to, what about that reference point that we think of as being who we are? That all of a sudden comes into question, because the subject, i.e., you know, the actual, our sense of self, and the objective universe, they reciprocally co-arise and reinforce each other. And here's quantum physics coming along saying, oh, by the way, there's no objective universe. Well, what I'm pointing at is that also brings into question and can dissolve our subjective sense of who we are, which is this identity that's really, like, you know, imprisoning us.
Well, it's ironically that identity that's imprisoning us is considered the marker of sanity. That when we diffuse of that, when we become only the observer and we lose that ego part, you know, that's where the hospitalization and medication comes in.
Yeah, oh totally. And that was why, like, when I had that experience, and like, when pretty much when anybody has an experience like that, it's so radical. when you step out of, you know, you've been habituated into identifying yourself as being a certain person, and then all of a sudden you see through that, it's so, you know, it's destabilizing, and it typically takes time to integrate. So for me, and I'm sure for so many people, you know, all I needed was, whether it was a number of months or, you know, however long, to really to be able to assimilate what I was realizing. But at first, it's so disorienting that, you know, you can't help but to appear from the mainstream, you know, point of view as if you've gone a little crazy.
Yeah, and of course, I love the representation in your book of three different ways of approaching reality as a baseball umpire. You know, the objective world, I call them as they are. The subjective world, I call them as I see them. And then the quantum world, they ain't nothing until I call them. You know, with the notion
right.
that reality is pulled from this pool of infinite possibility that some would call nothing, and that it exists on a need to exist basis, that as we measure something, as we observe something, it changes it. And there have been experiments where you can actually change the past. Talk about that.
Yeah, and you have to be careful with your words when you say you can actually change the past. Or, you know, the physicists are saying, you know, what we can change is what we can say about the past, you know, via in the present moment, the way we're interpreting it. So, you know, I just want to be clear that it's a very slippery slope. But the thing you're saying about, so quantum physics has discovered, that the quantum state is in this realm of like this. It's not like an actuality. It's a potentiality, and so it's kind of you know, one way to think of it is like this nearly infinite potentiality at each and every moment, and then along comes an observer, and of course there's another question of what constitutes an observer, but say if along comes an observer in whatever form, their act of observation, in a sense, all of those potentialities, you know, that they collapse into a particular specific actualization in that very same moment of observation that then will appear as the physical world. And one way to think about what that's showing us is that we, in our minds, have this incredible creative power via the way we engage with the world, the way we participate with the world, the way we observe the world and place meaning on the world. We have this incredible creative power that, you know, because up until now we've been unconscious of, we've been entrancing ourselves and hypnotizing ourselves. But quantum physics is actually showing us, it's like a spiritual, you know, treasure in a way that is completely tailor-made for this day and age. And it's actually showing us that we have this unbelievable power, you know, to influence the way reality manifests. And it's particularly powerful when you connect with other people who are also beginning to wake up to that, because what you discover is that we can connect with each other and put that creative genius together in a way where we can really change the world. And that's evolutionary, and that's what all of this is about. That's what my whole work is about. And quantum physics, that's what it's showing us, really.
You know, it's interesting. It seems like we're really in the kindergarten when it comes to this. You know, it took how long? 150 years from the time Copernicus made its discovery about the Earth revolving around the sun. 100 years later, Galileo was in prison for saying that. So it takes a while for the new paradigm to establish itself. And we are definitely living as if we're in a Newtonian universe of forces and opposite forces and so on. And we seem to be very, very limited in our sense that only the material world is real, that or else you're, you know, though that's the domain of religion. In the very little time we have left, the remaining 5 or 6 or 7 minutes, how do we take this new information? What is the next steps in the transformation and awakening from this dream and perhaps becoming lucid dreamers?
Sure, totally. No, I'm so glad you put it that way, because one way of describing what quantum physics is showing us, quantum physics is pointing at, you know, this being a dream. And not only is it pointing at it, it's an expression of the dreamlike nature, while simultaneously it's pointing at the dreamlike nature. And so when we see that, because the thing about if they really want to make a difference, the way to start is with the individual, that each and every one of us, we have to do our work on ourselves and connect with who we actually are, not our fictive identity, this abstract identity of being, you know, like in this limited ego, but to actually touch, you know, who we actually are. You know, in Buddhism, they'll talk about, you know, we have a true nature, to connect with the true nature. And as each individual person does that, one of the ways that that true nature expresses itself is by being creative. And so, like, one thing I talk about in my work is the profound, and it's, you know, I'm talking out of my own experience. If I didn't connect with my voice, with my true voice, and plug into the creative spirit that was coming through me, I would have been in deep, deep trouble. So the idea is, we're all artists, and we all have a wound. We're all these wounded healers. But if we can actually, you know, instead of being in avoidance of that wound, to actually experience it with as much consciousness as we're able to, and to express it creatively, and have the basis of our expression be real compassion, because the thing about compassion, it's an expression of actually, when we begin to see that this is a collective dream, the expression of that realization is compassion. And compassion, it's the dissolver of Watiko. So the idea of compassion, of connecting with other people, of expressing yourself in a creative way, and all of that is, like, you know, is having to do with tapping into our true power, that we're creative beings. But unfortunately, up until now, we've been hypnotizing ourselves to use our creative genius in a way that's against ourselves, that's limiting ourselves.
Yeah, we definitely have all of the agreements and habitual ways of being reinforce the separation. What are some pathways that people can take, particularly if they're looking at our political situation, they're looking to actually have a healing impact on the body politic? What might be some of the pathways they would take right now?
Yeah, no, sure. Well, I would say that we all are here with a vocation, with this mission, you know, and it's not like that each of us has to be like a superhero, world famous, you know, changing the world type of thing, but we all have a calling. And it's very much like a shaman, like, you know, like when a shaman gets called, if they don't assent to the calling, and if they say, no, I can't do that, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, or that's too hard, that's when they get sick, you know. But if they assent to the calling and they cooperate with it, then that same energy that was the source of the calling, it's also sends them exactly what they need in the terms of support. So the idea being for us to have courage to follow our calling, to find our vocation, that's going to connect us with that part of us that really, you know, the inner voice or the guiding spirit or, you know, one's angel or whatever. There are all these names and all the you know, different traditions. But that's for each and every one of us to do that in a non-local way, you know, immediately impacts on the entire non-local field. And because it's so easy to fall into despair and pessimism, but if we have a pessimistic attitude, then we're unwittingly feeding, you know, this world to manifest, you know, as far as giving us more evidence to prove our pessimism in a self-created feedback loop that we're actually investing in. So the idea is to not fall into pessimism or despair or depression, but to, you know, to just really have that courage to follow where your guidance is, you know, kind of envisioning that you go, and just to trust that you'll be taken care of, you know, whatever that means. I mean, I have no idea. And I mean, I'm just talking out of my own experience. I've been doing that for over 35 years, and, you know, it's gotten me to where I am now.
You know, this is really very interesting because evolution seems to be a fractal process. It's happening on the macro and on the micro, and the same kinds of problems that our society is going through in this illusion of separation. Human beings are suffering from autoimmune disorders, and so many of our societal problems are autoimmune disorders, where healthy cells have been mobilized to fight other healthy cells. And as individuals come to awaken to their own contribution, as the Swami would say, a little piece here, a little piece there, pretty soon there's one big piece everywhere, that may be the way to build this this newer world order.
Yeah, no, totally. And, you know, the fact is that it, like in quantum physics, what it's pointing out is that you can't predict the future. There's no, it doesn't exist in a definitive way. You know, it's a probabilistic future, and the best way to predict the future is to create it, really. And we're the ones who were the co-creators.
Well, that's a really good place to to land and highlight with our magical radio highlighter that this is the co-creation that we've been asking for. The template perhaps has been presented to us by quantum physics, which tells us that reality is in the process of being invented through our perceptions, through our designs, through our vocations, through our invocations, through our outvocations, and so on. So where can people find you online, Paul?
Well, I have a website, awakeninthedream.com, and there's just a ton of articles and a bunch of interviews, and then they can get my books there. And, that's the place people can go.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for a very rich hour, Paul Levy. His new book,
Totally
Quantum
My Pleasure.
Revelation.
Thank you.
Okay, Quantum Revelation will be out in May of this year. This is Steve Behrman. Thank you for visiting us on WikiPolitiki.